Hello and welcome to The Rundown, a podcast from Politics Home. I'm your host, Alan Tolhurst. After a chaotic evening in Parliament this week, where the Speaker Lindsay Hall broke the convention to allow a vote because he was fearful of attacks on MPs if he didn't, we'll look at the wider issue of the safety of our politicians after a raft of recent incidents that threaten our very democracy. We need to look at how better we can protect parliamentarians and their staff, as well as tackle the causes of abuse and harassment they face both online and in the real world. I'm pleased to have with me Elliot Colburn, Conservative MP and Vice Chair of the APPG on hate crime, and Kim Ledbetter, Labour MP for Batley and Spen, whose sister Jo Cox was murdered in 2016 while serving as the MP for that same constituency. So firstly, I guess I wanted to kind of start by asking you both to explain really what, when we talk about the abuse that MPs face, what is the kind of the nature of it and kind of the scale of it? Because I think that often I speak to MPs off microphone, they tell me about what they face, but we don't often hear it sometimes on the mic, and perhaps for fear of drawing more abuse onto yourselves. But just explain to us, I'll start with you, Elliot, kind of what you face since you've been an MP in 2019 and what you hear from your colleagues about the issues they face.
It can take many forms, and I think it does come down to some individual circumstances of each Member of Parliament as well. One of the things that we do know for sure, having sat on the Women and Equalities Committee for the last few years, is that female colleagues certainly get it in much higher droves, and it does take a particularly sexist and misogynistic nature. But also colleagues who might be from Black or other ethnic minority backgrounds also face particularly racist abuse. I'm an openly gay MP. I've faced homophobic abuse. So you do get people, I suppose, going for what you might call the playground low-hanging fruit. You know, the stuff that children would shout at each other because it's the easiest thing to sort of try and cut as deep as possible. So you do get that happen. But it has become quite sinister in many guises, in many respects, where there seems to be amongst a certain section of society this idea that MPs are fair game. Yeah. We've put ourselves in the line of fire. We have forfeited any right to be concerned about our own, or indeed our staff or our family's safety, because of the job we've chosen to do. And we just have to suck it up. And I think that actually has prevented more colleagues speaking out, because when colleagues do speak up about some of the abuse they have faced, they do often get shouted down and say, oh, boo-hoo, you're in a privileged position, get a grip. But there is a massive difference between being held to account, democratically held to account, about your views, your decisions, etc., and abuse. And I really don't think there's much of a grey area in between. I think it's actually pretty easy to distinguish between the two. I cannot for the life of me get to grips with why it has gone so much higher in the last few years. The only thing that I can point to, and I'm sure we'll get into this, is social media.
Kim, I saw you nodding along to a lot of that. Is that a similar thing that you've faced since you entered Parliament a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I think Elliot's done a really good roundup there of some of the issues that we face. And I think ultimately for me, the simple way of looking at this is we just want to do our jobs and feel safe in the same way that anybody else does. Sadly, I would even broaden this out. There is a specific problem for members of parliament and for councillors, for elected officials, but there is a broader problem within society. I've just been involved with a campaign where we've seen shop workers getting horrendous abuse. And we've had similar things with, you know, healthcare professionals. So unfortunately, I think there is a broader issue around society and how people's anger and frustration at various things has manifested itself in abuse and threats and really unpleasant behaviour. But I think for MPs, I think Elliot's right. I think what really upset me when I first came into the Houses of Parliament was the fact that it's almost been normalised as part of the job. So you speak to colleagues who say, oh yeah, I've had a death threat. Oh yeah, I've got someone in court next week. Like, this is all right. And that's not all right. It's not all right in any job. So I think, I mean, it's coming up to 8 years in June since my sister was murdered, and things were bad then. And we started working on how we could improve them. And through the work of the Jo Cox Foundation, we looked at improving civility in public life. And unfortunately, I would say things are definitely not better, and if anything, they are worse. So we've got to start to look at solutions. And for me, solutions is not about giving MPs more security and police officers and panic alarms to carry around with them. It's about, although that is important given what we're doing, it's more about how we change the culture of our politics and how we can return to a time, if indeed that time ever existed, but I think it probably did, where we could disagree respectfully. And the various things that are involved in that, the media's role in that, social media, MPs themselves, we have to look at our own behaviour on occasions and question, you know, are we becoming part of the problem and not part of the solution? And that's not acceptable.
Yeah, I definitely come on to that and kind of the role that politicians themselves play in that, going back to, I guess, the kind of the Brexit years and since then. Elliot, kind of, again, like the way that sort of Kim said, quite casually talked about the fact that, you know, colleagues have said, oh yeah, someone's in court next week, someone's been arrested for this. It has become, I should say, normalised. And I don't think that's something that necessarily the public has a real understanding of. We hear some of the high profile cases, the sort of the person who was sent to prison for trying to murder Rosie Cooper, the Labour MP, former Labour MP. But lots of other stuff just goes on in the background. And what kind of impact do you think that has on politicians in their ability to do their job and to say the things they want to say about the issues that they care about?
I think it is making some colleagues think twice about saying certain things, saying what they believe, which ultimately is our job. Our job is to say what we think. We're elected to say what we think.
As representatives of the people, right?
Precisely. We are there to do that job. But I do think it is starting to make some colleagues think twice and make them very nervous. Mm. And I think a lot of that is starting to be played out in the way that we conduct ourselves as members of parliament. But you're absolutely right. It's very bizarre. And when I talk to other people about this who aren't necessarily political, or speak to some of my mates who aren't, you know, heavily invested in day-to-day politics, they find it absolutely odd that we work in a space where we do casually have these conversations about this person is facing a death threat at the moment, this person has got a court case going on, because it has now become so common. Is now just part and parcel of what we do. But it has real democratic ramifications, because it is affecting the way that MPs are doing their jobs, but it is also affecting the way that we are trying to attract new talented people into all political parties to actually bother putting themselves forward for election. Because why on earth, if you are looking at the job of being a member of parliament, would you want to put up with all of that? Not just for yourself, but for everyone else in your life as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a big thing we'll kind of come on to later. And with an election coming up, probably going to be the largest new intake of MPs has been for a generation. And what kind of stuff is there in place, I suppose, to let people know what it is they're almost letting themselves in for, but also to prevent them from facing the issues? Because, you know, Elliot, you're from the 2019 intake. Several of your colleagues have said they're not going to stand for Parliament again at the election. Stuart Anderson, the Wolverhampton MP, has talked about, you know, facing kind of multiple, you know, threats. His family have moved out of the constituency, all this kind of stuff. And it's the kind of the impact that has, you know, it's damaging for democracy in general if there is that kind of stuff being faced, right?
100%, because we are being hindered in the job we are trying to do, or people are attempting to hinder us in the job that we are elected to do by use of intimidation and threats. So that cannot be good or healthy for a mature democracy like Britain's, because we have always prided ourselves in this country on being able to speak without fear or favour. We have all these excellent traditions in that respect. But now that is starting to be impacted, because colleagues are making active decisions on whether or not to, one, be MPs anymore, or two, how they conduct themselves as MPs for fear of being attacked, whether that be physical security around them when they're in their constituencies, or in how or what they say on certain topics. That cannot be good for democracy in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, you're right. And we'll talk about kind of the issues around place of work as well, because there was lots of stuff around Parliament, I say, but during the Brexit years and during the pandemic and beyond. You know, one of those people who said they're going to stand down is Mike Freer, the Conservative MP in Finchley. Kim, you said after he announced that he wasn't going to stand again because of the abuse and intimidation he's faced, that it's not surprising that he's not the first and he won't be the last to stand down. I wonder what you kind of made of Mike's words and what you think needs to be done that he's not the last, is it, in that sense?
Well, as I said, I wasn't surprised at that decision from Mike following the horrific attack on his office over Christmas and other things that have happened as well. It's the impact on democracy, isn't it? That's the important bit. You know, I don't expect anyone to feel sorry for me. I don't need or want people's sympathy, but I want us to have a healthy democracy. And if we are losing good people from public life because they are saying, I've just had enough, I can't do it. And that has happened over a number of years. You're right to talk about the Brexit years. There were a number of MPs who stepped down there. And it might not be the only reason why they're stepping
down. But it adds to it, doesn't it? It makes you think, do I really want another 5 years of this?
Exactly. So people are moving away from public life. Then you've got people, and I spend a lot of time going into schools, talking to children and young people about politics and how important it is. And sometimes they'll say, oh, do you think it's a good idea to become an MP? And you want to say yes, but why would you encourage a young woman, as Ali Elliott says, particularly because there is gender-based element to this as well, but actually anybody, why would you say, yeah, come and get involved? And then also, again, as Elliott says, elected officials who are thinking, gosh, if I vote that way, if I do that, if I say that, what are the consequences going to be, not just for me, but for my staff and for my family and for my friends? Because MPs, like other professions, to be fair, the police, I think, deal with similar issues. You're suddenly dehumanised. As soon as you've got those two letters after your name, you're not a mum, a sister, a daughter, a dad, or whatever anymore. You're an MP. And anything else, you know, it doesn't matter. Like a police officer, as soon as you put the uniform on, then all those things go out of the window. So I think that's the conversation that we need to have. And again, being really clear, and Elliot has said this as well, we are here to be criticised. We are here for people to disagree with us. It's absolutely fine. That is what a healthy democracy looks like. And I'd be the first one to stand up for robust, passionate political debate. But that's not the same as threatening, abusive, intimidatory behaviour, and we're seeing way too much of that at the minute.
Yeah, I mean, you say you're not looking for sympathy. I think you do deserve some sympathy for what's happened, you know, to you over the years. I just wondered, like, you talk about the impact on your family. Were they kind of worried about you following the same path after what happened? Obviously, the very rancorous by-election in which you came into Parliament, kind of, it was kind of a bit of a baptism of fire, the stuff that you faced. Did you wonder, what am I letting myself in for, essentially, when you did that? Or do you kind of knew going in that was going to be part of the price of entry, essentially, to Parliament these days?
No, I didn't think it'd be as bad as this, if I'm honest. Yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, what happened to us, there is absolutely no getting over it, and it's horrific. And we live that with that as a family every single day. I was particularly thinking about during recent weeks and months when things have been particularly toxic. I never set out to have a career in politics, but one of the main reasons that I did choose to put myself forward eventually was because Joe used to say to me, politics needs good people. It needs people with a heart. It needs people with compassion and empathy and decent human beings. And if those people don't put themselves forward, then you might not get what the public deserves. And that's why I put myself forward. But in terms of the impact on your family and friends, I mean, it's just horrible, you know. And again, MPs are embarrassed to talk about that because you don't want it to be about you. You don't want it to be about what your life's like. I just want to do my job. That's all I want.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking about those good people, Elliot, unfortunately, one of those people who was seen as a good person in politics, Sir David Amiss, was killed as an MP back in 2021. After that happened, the former Home Secretary, Priti Patel, announced a review by police forces looking at kind of MP security arrangements. And there was a new thing set up, I think, in 2016 as well. And I looked at some contemporary reports because obviously there has been previous incidents. The MP, Stephen Timms, was stabbed at a constituency surgery in 2010. Andrew Pennington, who was assistant to an MP in Cheltenham, was killed in 2000. Look at the sort of contemporary reports. You know, after every one, there's this debate on MP safety. But does it move on? You know, does it actually, have they dealt with those issues, you know, in the years since we've seen them?
I think seeing politics change over the years, so I did spend a little bit of time working for MPs before becoming an MP, although my career was mainly in the health service. And there has been changes. I think our offices and our homes are certainly more secure than they used to be. The fact that we even have security put on them now is new. I think I agree with Kim, actually, because bar sort of having permanent bodyguards around us all the time, which I do not think is a good idea, because that's a nightmare to sort out anything. Even visiting a school suddenly becomes a logistical nightmare if you've got to deal with private security in that sense. Yes, we have to always be conscious of the adequacy of the physical security around MPs. But I think it is also a societal thing we need to look at. You know, why has the dial shifted? Why do so many people now, a significant number to make it worrying anyway, think that it's acceptable to threaten, intimidate, or carry out physical attacks on members of parliament purely because of the job that they do? So yeah, physical security, very important. And I have seen the dial shift. And, you know, I've always said, if I'm inside my home or my office or in Westminster, I feel relatively secure. But we have to deal with the cause of the intimidation and the abuse as well. I don't think we can just look at physical security, because the only place I can sort of see that going, as I say, is having sort of permanent security or bodyguards around us all the time. And I just think that would be an awful ramification in terms of democratic access of constituents to their members of parliament. If you look at some of the cabinet, for example, or ex-prime ministers and the kind of security they have to have with them for life, it does make planning their lives incredibly difficult. They can't just pop to the shop. They can't just be seen around their constituency without careful planning. I know that I don't want to work like that.
Right. And as we come back to it, that would be off-putting to someone wanting to enter, someone wanting to become Northern Ireland secretary because they wanted to fix some of the problems there. Why would you, if you knew that you would then have to have security details for years and years to come, possibly for the rest of your life, if you do something contentious?
Exactly. So I have seen physical security improve. I'm not saying that there's not more that couldn't be done. And I think it's right that we keep it under review. But actually, until we get to grips of the reasons why and try to figure out solutions as to how we can stop people thinking that it's acceptable to treat people in this way, then I think we will just keep on going round in circles.
Mm. Kim, as I said, Operation Bridger was set up in the wake of your sister's death. And obviously the guidance from that is reviewed sort of every year. You know, as I said, Priti Patel promised action after Sir David Amiss. But I reported in a piece in 2022 that the trail had run cold. I think my colleague spoke to you for that piece. You know, has anything happened in the sort of 2 years since then?
I think there are a range. Well, I know there are a range of security options available to MPs. I mean, I take every advice that's given to me and I take every precaution that I possibly can. But again, I don't want to live my life
in a securitized way, right? Yeah.
I don't want to do that. The best bit of this job is chatting to people and meeting people and going out and about. And, you know, I've lived in my constituency my entire life. I don't want to suddenly have to be hiding behind closed doors all the time. That's just not how I want to do the job. And it's not how I want to live my life. And the other thing is, all that stuff costs a lot of money. You know, we're facing a cost of living crisis. And I don't think we want to be spending loads of taxpayers' money wrapping MPs in cotton wool. So I think we've got to look at the causes of the problem. The Jo Cox Commission, just a couple of weeks ago, actually issued a report called No Place in Politics, Tackling Abuse and Intimidation. And they've got, I think it's 28 recommendations in there. And I think, you know, people should have a good look at those. But we've got to look at, I think one thing for me is political education. I think the other reason a lot of people get angry and frustrated is they don't really understand what an MP can and can't do. So the stuff that you're held accountable for, you've got no control over. And I think you can't blame people for that because they've never had it explained to them. No one's ever said to them that, you know, an MP isn't in charge of your wheelie bins or the potholes. Although there is a national consequence of decisions that are taken by central government around some of those issues. So, but that's never been explained to them. And equally, in terms of, you know, if we look at some of the international horrendous situations that are going on at the moment, there is only so much MPs can do. So it's that piece of political education, which I think is really, really important. And then again, you've touched on it already, but the situation with social media and the polarizing nature of social media, where there is no room for nuanced debate on complex subjects. So I think until we start to unpick the reasons why we are where we are, it's going to be very difficult to change anything. And I don't want it to be just about giving MPs more security.
I think at the time there was a problem with not understanding the separate nature of kind of online and offline abuse. And obviously those two things are related. Since that piece, obviously the Online Safety Act is now in force. Do you think that has the safeguards in there, you know, related to this kind of stuff? Or do you think that it needs a separate piece of work to pull together those threads, you know, to stop, as you say, that kind of online abuse, that kind of casual criticism leading into something more serious?
I mean, I sat on the Online Safety Bill Committee, not right from the start because I wasn't an MP then, but in the later stages.
Well, it took about 6 years, so it was a long time to go.
Exactly. Right. I've only been around for a couple. It's a starting point. And I think there was consensus actually across the House that it's better than nothing. We've got to start somewhere with this sort of legislation. I personally would have liked it to have gone further. We did ask for something to be in there from the Labour Party around political life, and that was rejected. And again, I understand why there's an argument against that, because you don't want to be treated as a special case. However, democracy is fundamental to society. I also think there needs to be much more work done around anonymity. And whilst there is a place for anonymity on social media, there's got to be much harsher rules and restrictions. And again, this isn't just about MPs, is it? This is about young people. We've got the work being done at the moment following the horrendous murders that we've seen and suicides of young people taking their own lives. So there's a much bigger piece of work to be done around social media for general safety and security, I think, and the good of society.
Mm. Yeah, Elliot, where do you kind of see that cross-section between the kind of online and offline abuse and kind of what needs to be put in place to prevent, as you say, that abuse from getting worse and becoming more serious as it goes forward?
The Online Safety Act, I do agree, is a good start. Of course, quite a lot of the Online Safety Act isn't online yet. In terms of being activated, the Act is going to take some time to become fully enforced. And then, as with any new bit of legislation, particularly when you're regulating somewhere like the online space, it's probably going to require a fair few tests in the courts to sort of fully establish precedent and exactly what the ramifications are going to be. So I think it's probably too early to say if the Online Safety Act has or can improve the situation when it comes to abuse of MPs online. I definitely think at the moment things haven't changed that much that I can see online. There are some platforms that are better than others in terms of engaging with them. We've seen it again from a women equalities perspective. We brought social media companies in to talk about the abuse of young women and girls, for example. The blatant selling of illegal goods on some platforms as well, which goes unchecked. And the excuse that is often made by these platforms is that they are simply a platform and they are not in charge of the content, and then therefore they should not be held accountable for anything that goes on it. I think there's now a consensus, not just in the UK, but around the world, that that's ridiculous. They have to have some duty of care, and that is what the Online Safety Act seems to do. But I think it's probably too early to tell if that piece of legislation is going to have a long-lasting impact on the safety of MPs, to be honest. Whether or not that turns into prosecutions is difficult to say. I've had a number of cases where people have threatened me online and then the police go to see them. And often, 9 times out of 10, they come back and say, they're really sorry, they were drunk, they were angry, they won't do it again. And that's the end of the matter. And I believe them. I absolutely believe them. You know, we all have moments where our anger gets the better of us. I know I've certainly had one too many in the past, and I don't think I've ever sent anyone a threatening message. But
no,
I've probably did a few silly things in my uni years. But you know, I fully accept that. But there is always that underlying fear or concern that it could turn into something more serious and could come into the physical world. And that, I think, is something that we're always conscious of.
Yeah. Kim, you mentioned it towards the beginning about the role that MPs themselves have to play. I think you said after Mike Freer was done, that elected people should take responsibility for their words and actions as well as kind of the media and social media and disinformation, all that kind of stuff. And it was before both your times, but the kind of the Brexit wars debates in Parliament were kind of very toxic. And there was criticism from some MPs of leaders for pushing people into the arms of people who are going to be abusive by suggesting that they were doing the wrong thing and not representing their constituents, that sort of stuff. Do you think that the role that the leaders of parties need to take, do you think, going forward on this kind of stuff and setting an example, you know, from the dispatch box, PMQs and other places to try and not lean into this kind of problem?
Absolutely. I think everybody has to be part of the solution, and particularly, I would say, MPs, leaders in this country. Leadership looks like doing the right thing, as far as I'm concerned. And if we don't hold ourselves to the highest standards, then what chance have we got of other people doing the same and respecting us? You know, again, politics is a tough business, and it's a passionate business, and there's nothing wrong with that. But we need to make sure that we don't descend into insults and aggression and, you know, and the nastiness. Or then, like I said, we are then part of the problem. And I am worried in a general election year that will get worse and things will get ramped up. I also think we need to look at the role of the media in that. I'm sure Elliot would agree. There's so much positive stuff that happens in Parliament that isn't covered and people don't know about. Debates, work that is done on a cross-party basis. You know, I work very closely with a couple of Conservative colleagues. Tracy Crouch is a friend of mine. We've done a huge amount of work on loneliness together. I play on the all-party women's football team. MPs of all different persuasions are on there, and we connect and we find common ground in other ways. You've got lots of all-party parliamentary groups, you've got select committees, you've got lots of other ways of work, but the public don't see that. They see the horribleness and they see the confrontational side.
Yeah, we like writing about the rows rather than the times you agree, right?
And of course you do, and I understand that, but the danger is that fuels a toxic climate. And you're right, you know, okay, online is one thing. It's horrible, it's unpleasant, and it shouldn't, you know, some of that behaviour shouldn't take place. But the offline stuff we've seen recently with MPs' houses and offices being attacked, and protest is fine, legitimate legal process is absolutely fine. But we've seen stuff that's gone far beyond that in recent times. It's everybody taking responsibility, including those in public office.
Yeah, Elliot, just on that, obviously we saw Tobias Elwood, your Conservative colleague, had protesters outside his house when he was in there with his children, you know, and the Mail on Sunday was reporting that Just Stop Oil are plotting a campaign to try and occupy MPs' homes for an election, that sort of stuff. Do you think we perhaps need buffer zones around kind of MPs, you know, houses, that sort of thing? I mean, obviously it's a big step to go to, but I suppose, is that where we perhaps ended up? As Kim says, in an election year, these things might start to ramp up.
Yeah, I don't think MPs' homes are fair game at all. And the thing is, it's not just us that are in there. Our families are in there. We also have neighbours who may be prevented from leaving their homes as well. So no, I don't think MPs' houses are fair game. And actually, quite a lot of the activities around MPs' offices, where you would arguably have more legitimacy because you are targeting someone's the place of work, that has gone from legitimate peaceful protest to damaging the front of the office, shouting abuse at our staff through the windows. I've had that happen outside my constituents' office. So no, I don't think MPs' houses are fair game, and that's a hill I'm willing to die on. No, I don't think people should be allowed to turn up at their MP's house. There is a reason now that our home addresses are not published on ballot papers anywhere online to avoid this sort of thing. And there's a reason that we now have to have security put on our residential homes for that reason too. So no, I don't think MP's homes are fair game at all.
Kim, before we kind of move on to the stuff going on in the future for new MPs coming in, just talk about this week's vote and it kind of showed, I suppose, the impact of potential abuse on parliamentary procedures. Not the role of this podcast to talk about the rights and wrongs of the motions. I don't want to get into that stuff, but just on a kind of a wider problem, you know, it kind of showed that the potential for MPs to get abused influenced a decision in Parliament. And that's kind of, in a sense, a bit of potentially mob rule forcing kind of the way that politics is done. And I think that is kind of a very dangerous way to potentially go. And that's obviously what you and others want to push back on, to prevent that from having an impact on the way you go about your job, right?
It is really dangerous. And I think I'm still reeling from what happened last night. I think it's probably fair to say lots of MPs didn't really know quite what was going on, because it became very procedural. Yeah. And it also became, again, I would say, far too aggressive. It's probably not too strong a word, some of the behaviours that we're seeing in terms of, and I understand the passion around this issue, but the problem is we're now talking about what happened in the UK Parliament last night, and we're not talking about saving lives in Gaza and getting hostages released and all the really important things that we should be talking about in the Middle East. And so I'm really worried that it's become a distraction rather than giving us a substantial debate on a really important subject. And I'm not apportioning blame to any party last night. I'm not apportioning blame to any individual, because I don't think that's helpful. I'm sure people will look into that, but it wasn't the best of us by any stretch of the imagination.
No, and Elliot, as a spectacle to someone who wants to maybe stand in an election, all parties are selecting candidates to stand in the election coming up. It's not exactly the best way to sell the idea of being an MP going forward. I wonder, do you speak to people who want to stand for Parliament, new candidates and campaigners, that sort of stuff? And what do you kind of say to them about this kind of issue, and how much of an impact it potentially has if you want to be a parliamentarian?
It is one of the most common questions I get asked by potential candidates, people who are exploring the option. You know, just how bad is it? How do you deal with it? What are your coping mechanisms? What's the security like? It has now become one of the most common things I get asked, which is awful, because what you'd like to talk about is actually all the good you can do as an MP and how amazing the opportunity is and the sort of things you get to experience. It's just incredible in that respect. But it has now become the biggest topic of conversation for new candidates, and understandably so. And I have noticed that there are very, very good people who come from all sorts of walks of life, who would bring a really fresh, healthy perspective on things, bring new experiences into Westminster, and I think be great assets to our national discussion, who are turning around and saying, no, thank you. No, thank you. And in the end, what's that going to lead to? It will end up with a parliament full of people who are able to deal with that, but they might not necessarily have the most diverse of backgrounds or experiences. And I don't think that is healthy for us whatsoever. So it is very common amongst potential candidates that I speak to.
Yeah, Kim, the former Labour MP, Luciana Berger, was on the podcast last year, said that our democracy is diminished when people in politics are made to feel unsafe, you know, due to this kind of abuse. What kind of message could you give to potential candidates who want to stand about what it's like? And you know, does there need to be a special sort of section for new candidates on dealing with this kind of stuff and advice maybe once they become MPs? You know, often I feel that MPs are kind of thrown in the deep end when they become elected. You right, off you go, Parliament sits the following week and off you go, and you're not kind of given this kind of, you know, walk through these kind of things you will face. Do you think there needs to be more around that?
Yeah, and I think there is work being done in that regard. You're right. I think the induction process could be much more thorough and more comprehensive. I think maybe that the conversations prior to people standing could be more thorough and go into a bit more detail. But equally, again, you don't want to put people off.
No. Yeah, absolutely. But you've got to give them the whole truth, though, haven't you, I suppose?
Yeah, I think you've got to be honest about some of the challenges, but equally, you don't want to put people off. I mean, I was speaking to Luciana Berger last week, and I mean, she had a horrific time, some of the stuff she went through.
Straight from her selection, even a selection process in 2010, she had gotten loads of abuse, and it just carried on the whole time she was an MP.
Yeah, and again, we don't want to lose, as we've said, you know, good, decent people, and also people with compassion and humanity. And I remember one of the very last messages I sent to my sister was about digging in and doing a good job and not changing who she is. And also, if she needed to step away, then stepping away. And she said, I just need to get a thicker skin. And I said to her, Jo, you don't need to get a thicker skin. I said, you don't ever change who you are.
Yeah.
Keep being the compassionate, empathetic, amazing person that you are. And if that means that this isn't the job for you, then that's not the job for you. But that makes me so sad to say that, because we need good people and we need decent people in politics. And that is the fear, that we will put those people off.
Yeah, I think Elliot, Charles Walker, one of your Tory colleagues, was talking about having to have the hide of a rhino to be an MP. And he's another one who's going to stand down. But just before we wrap up then, it's often quite a downbeat conversation you often have around this kind of subject. Is there anything you can offer a bit more of a sense of a hope and kind of a nice sort of a closing message from either of you about what you kind of think? Obviously, we've had two MPs on both sides of the divide having a good conversation here. Is that kind of the way that it needs to go? Cross-party, putting a kind of face on it that shows that, you know, it doesn't have to be quite as bad as we've been discussing.
Absolutely. And I always say that the good massively does outweigh the bad. In this job, I have met some of the most amazing people throughout the last 4 or 5 years. And I have people on both sides of the divide that I would consider friends, who I get on really well with, who I just think are in it for the right reasons. I think most MPs are in it for the right reasons. Parliament actually is a place where you can do a lot of really good stuff. I'm not trying to repeat sort of David Cameron's last PMQ's leaving speech here, but I do agree in the sense that, you know, I've seen the good that can be done being a member of Parliament, and just what an honour and a privilege it is. And I love doing it. I absolutely love doing it. And I see positive stuff all the time, whether it be within Parliament itself, or going out and about and actually seeing some amazing people doing amazing things. And I think if you focus in on that, that is the healthiest coping mechanism I have, is to sort of, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but do count your blessings and count the good stuff, because you will see that it does massively outweigh the bad. And actually, the world isn't so terrible.
Yeah, sure. Kim, as a noted optimist, can you give us a note of optimism to end on then, please?
Yeah, and you're right. I am a glass half full person. I'm a positive, energetic, optimistic person. So it is sad to be talking about such a difficult subject. But yeah, I think the thing is about finding that common ground with people. And Elliot's right. I mean, I'm the same. I've got good friendships in this place across different political divides. It's the first time I've met Elliot today, and I could probably go for a beer with him. He sounds like a So it's that sort of stuff, isn't it, that people just don't see. And it's sort of leading by example in terms of showing that whatever the differences are, you can find that common ground. And we need to do much more across society at focusing on the commonalities rather than the things that divide us. That's a really strong message that we should all be sending out from Westminster, even though it can be very, very challenging at times.
That's all we've got time for this week, but you can read all the latest on the big stories from Westminster at politicshome.com, and keep right up to date by subscribing to our 7-day week newsletters by clicking on the link on our homepage. Thanks to my brilliant guests, Kim Ledbetter and Elliot Colburn. Thanks all again for listening. Please subscribe wherever you podcast and leave us a review. If you want to get in touch, then reach out to us on Twitter at politicshome or email us via news@politicshome.com. But for now, I've been Alan Tolhurst, and this has been The Rundown.